Welcome in to Run the Damn Podcast, Rob Snyder, alongside Craig Kolodny. And Craig, it's a special episode because today we are going to have our first ever guest appearance. Joining us in a little bit is our buddy Jack Loughran. Like me, a Philadelphia native and fan during one of the worst weeks in Philadelphia sports ever, so we will commiserate on that. We'll get to him in a second. The Patriots are 4-2 on the season. What a year to start a podcast. 4-2 New England Patriots. They beat the Saints. Was it 25-19 or 26-19? It was one of those. They won.
25-19.
25-19, yep. Just your normal 25-19 NFL game. This was a game that was actually really entertaining for a lot of it. I thought this could potentially be boring. We got some really nice Spencer Rattler series. We obviously had a lot of good Drake May. But unfortunately, the referees decided that they were going to make this about them. One of the worst officiated games I've ever seen. I said last week, I'm not an official complainer. When my team loses, I will never blame the officials for that. I think that's loser stuff. But I will complain about the officiating when it's this bad. So I'm not blaming the officials for anything, but I am ripping them a new one. How do you feel about that, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, when you have 113 yards of offense and a touchdown taken away by two bogus offensive pass interference calls.
Terrific.
Look, there's bad officiating every week. There's probably a handful of games today that had horrible officiating. I challenge to find a worse officiated game than what we saw today. I mean, it wasn't just bad against the Patriots, bad against the Saints. It was just to be able to sit there and watch the refs just absolutely ruin what was a fairly exciting game between the Patriots and the Saints team that has some fight. You know, Kellen Moore has them competing. They're not getting blown out every week. So, the referees are terrible. We can complain about them. For me, this is about Drake May once again elevating this team to a win. And it's about his ability to bring out the best in some of these guys. You know, we talked a lot earlier this year about, you know, once they get the quarterback, you know, up to a better standard, you're going to start to see guys like Pop Douglas and Kayshon Booty be able to make plays because the quarterback's, elevating them. And this wide receiver group has really benefited from Diggs' recent performance. But to me, it's all about May and what he's been able to do, moving outside the pocket. He did it again today. What was nice today was to see those deep balls, Rob. I mean, we've seen a lot of the short stuff over the last few weeks, but to see him really stretch the field, get some other guys involved, I thought that was the biggest thing. The penalties were a mess, but I'm glad it didn't cost them the game.
On the deep balls, in one second. Fine, Craig. We'll start there. I want to start with the refs, but we will start there. One thing, you mentioned the deep balls. You know what was the common denominator on every deep ball? Unbelievable protection today.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think as the game wore on, the protection broke down. Morgan Moses had a couple really bad series. Yeah. But early on the first half when the Pats were scoring, the protection was there. And I think that was a big – I think the problem, the reason the protection got worse as the game went on is because the Pats had no run game to lean on, which we'll get to in a second. But I agree with you. I thought, again, May was awesome. Kayshon Booty had a great game. Again, they were selective with Diggs. I think the Diggs stuff gets overblown when they're like, oh, they went to Diggs. They fed Diggs. Like, I think they feed whoever's open. And I thought Booty had a really, really good game. Douglas should have had a better game. You know, the penalties, and he still had a good one, but like the penalties were annoying. I will say now as I look at it, because we were anti-Pop Douglas early in the season. And
I still
we thought, that's good to hear. I'm glad you haven't wavered. But I like the fact that like with Diggs and Booty and Mac Hollins and Douglas, it feels like you can kind of line up with different sets and be confident that someone on the field is going to get open. So that does feel very good.
Yeah. And, you know, Diggs obviously would have had a much bigger stat line if not for that bogus, call, in the fourth quarter on that one down the sideline. Yeah. But to me, this game, I agree with you, the offensive line over the last few weeks has played very well. I think this is a game that in previous years, this team would have lost because of the penalties and not being able to overcome a little bit of adversity. And look, they were playing one of the worst teams in the NFL. Let's not make it seem like it was the Bills from last week. But, they're 4-2 for the first time since 2019, which is crazy. I mean, six years now. We're finally heading back towards the playoffs. These are the games that you have to win in order to get the playoffs. And we're going to look back on it in 3 months. And I'm not going to care that they only beat the Saints by 6 points. They overcame adversity. The other thing that, I think you know, they didn't have that hangover from the Bills game. They could have easily, oh, we beat the Bills Sunday night. You know, we're facing a team that has one win, has a quarterback that really doesn't necessarily belong in the NFL. I think it was a big time win for them in a sense that they stayed the course, they were focused, and they didn't have a letdown after the Bills game.
I agree to a point. I will say there were some parts of this game where I thought the Pats were playing bad enough to lose. The first and goal from the one, and they kicked the field goal. That's, you know, that's something that should bite you. The delay of game, there was this, the whole thing with the, I'm trying to think of the delay of game, then the bad snap by Bradbury, and they get nothing out of that. So, you know, and I thought Spencer Rattler looked like super competent. They couldn't cover Chris Olave. They couldn't run the ball. Like there were things throughout the game where I was like, okay, this would be bad enough to lose if it was a different opponent. But I hear you. They came out strong. So like there was no hangover from the Bills game. I thought they just made, you know, mental errors as the game went on. Yeah. So I agree with you. You know, next week the Patriots will try to do something they've never done in their franchise history, even with Tom Brady, and that is win three consecutive games on their schedule that are all on the road.
Wow. How many chances do they have with Brady?
You know, it's funny. That doesn't happen very often. It really doesn't. Yeah. It's not like that's, you know, but it does happen every once in a while where a team will be scheduled three straight road games, and that is always a time where you're going to suffer a loss. Tennessee feels like a win. So we will see if they can accomplish that next week in Tennessee. The Vrabel return, that whole thing feels like it's leaning heavy Patriots, but we'll see. But what other positives, you know, they did win. So was there another positive you want to hit on?
Other positives, just the notes that I've written down, you know, it's simple, but no turnovers, you know, especially coming after the Steelers game a few weeks back where they turned it over five times. I think that was a big one. You know, May being efficient, also adding the big plays. I think those are the biggest things. I think the defense, you know, not allowing a touchdown in the second half, you know, only allowing the 3 points. Obviously, what's crazy about this game, and I know our guest will appreciate this, but I'll bring it up now. Somehow, they scored, I think it was 34 points in the first half or 38 points in the first half. The over-under was 46, and they never got there.
They never that's true. That's tremendous. I think each team kicked a field goal in the second half, right? That was it?
Yeah, two field goals, that's it.
Incredible. I just sweat that one up in Vegas. I was going to say, again, not to focus too much negatively, but defensively, what was your read on what was going on defensively? It felt like the pass rush wasn't getting there. Is it just that Olave is really good, or did you see something else?
No, I think it was, we're going to be aggressive on the first play of the game. And they got burned by having a safety that can't cover anybody try to cover the Saints' best receiver.
We tried to talk up Kyle Duggar when he wasn't playing.
play to his strengths. I think Duggar's a useful body, but it's like don't have a matchup one-on-one on a 50-yard go route with the other team's number one. But I think they got burned on that play, and then they were a little more selective. I think that was they thought Spencer Rattler and this offense isn't going to sustain a 13 play 80 yard drive against them and end it with a touchdown. So it's like,
I would have felt the same way. Yeah.
Play. Don't give up the bombs. And then, you know, and that's what happened. I mean, I think they, you know, Milton Williams was also sick going into the game. Landry got hurt and came back, you know, and again, we joke about it, but no Jalen Hawkins, you know, who's been their starting safety for what it's worth, even though we aren't huge fans.
Yeah.
look, I think the defense played well enough to win. They didn't kill the team, and obviously they weren't facing a great offense, so I didn't have any issues with what the defense did.
I could bring up little things like Ramondre Stevenson not being able to find any room throughout the game. But that's kind of their run game right now. You know, there's little things here and there. Are you ready? Can we collectively dump on the refs for a second here?
Yeah.
Can I do that? So I have written down, and it's a list. We have the offense. So the first offensive pass interference on Diggs on the DeMario Douglas touchdown, that had to be maybe the worst individual call I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That and felt late. Like that felt like a oh no, the Patriots score. We didn't want them to score there for whatever reason. Yep. It was a first quarter under or something. They ended up scoring on the drive anyway. But the flag came out so late, and it was for something that allegedly happened in the first like 10 yards of the route. And it was just Diggs and another guy like kind of hand fighting. I was shocked at that. They called Diggs on another offensive BI, which I guess you could say it was. He didn't actually push off, but he extended the arm and the cornerback sold it a little bit. The makeup call on the Saints, by the way, on the play after the Diggs PI was also horrendous. It wasn't even PI. You could have called a legal contact, maybe. The no pass interference on the Mac Hollins right after that second Diggs OPI.
Yep.
Also a terrible call.
Breaking his arm. Yep.
And then this one I kind of blame Vrabel for. The Olave catch and then got it punched out was clearly a fumble. And the Patriots didn't challenge that. Then there's the later play where the guy does fumble and the refs are supposed to let that go. And they blow it down and the Patriots had a challenge. And they actually got that one back. And I was afraid that they wouldn't. But this was, and then the reverse at the end of the game with the out of bounds, no out of bounds thing that let them run the clock out.
Yep.
It's less about the result of this game. The Patriots win this game regardless, and most of those calls went against them. It's more that the product suffers by how awful some of these games are being called.
Yeah, it makes it unwatchable at times. And you know, look, I totally get where you're coming from with the refs. It was an absolute joke. You know, some of these calls are just absolutely horrendous. The one I'm with you brought up the Mac Hollins one right after the. So it's like you're going to call that ticky-tack one on Diggs on a huge play. And then the Pats and May throws a perfect ball and Mac Hollins is right there to catch it. And of course, he gets his arm pulled down. Look, it's an officiating problem. I know our guest is also an official, for a different sport. So he could easily weigh in on that. Look, the officials, I'm upset about it too. It makes it super frustrating to watch in the moment. I just don't know. Like, it's one of those things where when it rains, it pours. It was like they're trying to make every call seemed worse than the one before it. So it was a hot mess today for the Zebras for sure.
I wonder, like, I keep thinking about, like, how do they fix it? I like the expedited replay, but, like, you can't do that all the time. Do they need a ref, like, watching the broadcast, like upstairs at the 50-yard line, like, in the club level, just, like, sitting there and being like, that's a call. That's not a call. That's, you know, like, I know the other refs are, like, up close, but I feel like sometimes the closer they are, they can't tell what's going on.
No, and again, we've talked about this before, just not on the podcast. These guys are older. It's hard for these guys to keep up with these 20-year-old athletes as things are happening fast. And like, you know, we've seen our parents try to keep up with our kids. It's like there's an age gap there where it's just that you're asking guys who are, you know, you almost need refs that are 25 years old to ref games played by 20-year-olds or, you know, by the same age bracket, because you're just getting these guys that are, you know, these folks that are just not able to keep up. I don't know if having somebody in the booth really makes a huge difference. I mean, I want to hear less from the refs. I don't want to hear more. And I don't think that I think the replays are critical. I think they had a really bad day today. And I agree with you. We could have done remember a few weeks ago we ranked the five Patriots turnovers from worst to first.
Yeah. I was actually thinking that.
We could have done that with the officials' calls today.
The Diggs first OPI was obviously the worst one I've ever seen. Yes. And the makeup call right after that might have been the second worst of the game. That was a
top 10. We could
also like stop ruining the best plays of games with calls that have nothing to do with the play. Like they just completed a bomb to a guy who scored a touchdown and you called OPI on the opposite end of the field. Like just stop with that. You know, this is another week where the Patriots are kind of handling business. They're handling it the same way with their quarterback playing well, their offensive line blocking well. They're really getting it done in the pass game. I think McDaniels continues to do a really, really good job. They need to find a way to get their run game going and maybe it's more creative runs, but like, it feels like they're getting it done the same way, and the defense is kind of bend don't break. Is there anything else on this game that you feel like you want to hit on?
No, I feel not so much in the game, but I feel like now, you know, we should have popped some champagne as they matched their win total from a year ago.
Oh, man. And the last 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the upcoming schedule. And I'm a big schedule guy, but at Tennessee, so they're facing Cam Ward, against Cleveland, Dylan Gabriel, against Atlanta, Michael Penix, at Bucks, which is going to be fun. Considering
that should be a fun one. Yeah, yeah. Baker's been awesome.
First the Jets at Cincy. Again, we've talked about this stretch here. A lot of wins up for grabs. What would you do? I know we still have some time before the trade deadline, but this team is clearly shown, barring serious injuries, that they're going to be in the playoff mix. Mm-hmm. And not saying they're making the playoffs, but they'll definitely be in the mix. I've read a lot of things and heard a lot of things of, well, you know, maybe they trade away Duggar for a 6th-round pick. Maybe they trade Anthony Jennings for a 7th-round pick. To me, I'm looking at it the other way. I'm keeping those guys because keep them as depth. Anthony Jennings is a damn good backup player to have. Mm-hmm. I want to add to this team. I want to trade a 6th-round pick and get somebody in. So I know we weren't planning to talk about this, but this is kind of where my mind's at. What position – I think we've talked linebacker – Do you think they need to add on the offensive side of the ball or defensive side of the ball more?
So it's weird because they're built to be better defensively, but their offense is carrying them. Right. I mean, their defense has been fine, but it seems like the offense is kind of the strength of the team, at least in the first half of these games. You know, you could argue the defense kind of catches up as the game goes on. I wouldn't mind a linebacker because I'm still not – I'm not a Robert Spillane, Christian Ellis believer.
Yeah.
You know what the other sneaky position I would add? Left guard. I don't know how much those guys get traded in season. There's not a lot of offensive line moves mid-season. Yeah. But you're struggling running the ball. It would be nice to have somebody experienced next to Will Campbell. I don't know if that's a position that you know you get. Running back would be cool, but I don't know if the problem is the backs. I think it's the run blocking. And I'm set at receiver. I see zero need to start adding to the receiver group. I don't have an issue with the receiver group. I don't have an issue with any of the weapons that Drake May has. I'm fine with it. I think the greedier you get, the more you're screwing up the chemistry of that group. I wouldn't really concern myself with that. So sure. I kind of like linebacker, and I think if you can get an offensive lineman. But again, I can't remember the last time I saw an offensive lineman traded in season.
Yeah, and like you could look at teams like the Ravens or teams that had higher expectations that are struggling, and maybe you could poach a guy off one of those teams. You know, I think another position for me, Rob, you know, you mentioned it there, is running back. I think running back is something that they've certainly, you know, you're one injury away there from Henderson or Stevenson, and we all don't really love Stevenson anyways at this point, given how much he's been fumbling. I think running back, they need to get somebody better than Terrell Jennings, somebody like an Antonio Gibson, who obviously is out for the year. But I would try to get somebody like that where he's reliable, can be a little bit of a bell cow if Stevenson gets hurt or continues to fumble. I would like to see there. My other position is going to be super hard because nobody trades them, is cornerback. You know, Carlton Davis has left a couple games now and come back. Gonzalez missed the first 3 games. I think this team has a chance to, with the AFC being a little more wide open, with the Chiefs seemingly looking a little down, the Ravens 1-5, and you already beat the Bills in Buffalo, there's no real reason to think that you can't be super competitive deep into the playoffs if everybody's healthy. And I'm not saying they will, but I think adding a few reinforcements could go a long way for them.
I would agree. I actually do like the cornerback add. I don't know what that would do for Carlton Davis as far as his feelings around that, but I do agree that that might be a little bit of a weakness on this team, so to speak.
Yeah.
All right, I think it's time
to bring in
our first ever guest on Run the Damn Podcast. Our very good friend Jack Lochran joins us. Jack, like me, is a Philadelphia native and a Philadelphia sports fan. And over the last 7 or 8 days, we've had quite the depressing run of Philadelphia sports. So, Jack, since we're talking football, I know it's probably the lesser thing on your mind, but the Philadelphia Eagles have now lost 2 in a row. the first loss felt a little fluky. The last loss was a absolute destruction by the New York Giants. If you had to make a blame pie, four things. Yeah, first, would you eat it? Who do you blame for the Eagles' issues that currently?
First of all, I just want to say,
how's it?
Thank you. I am honored to be the first guest on this podcast. I am very, very not well. I am not doing good. It has been a terrible, terrible 8 days. Where do I start with the Eagles? I think I have to start with the offensive line. They can't run the ball. Pass protection is meh. It's fine. I mean, it's okay. Obviously, Landon Dickerson, the left guard, was out. He was hurt before that. But they get no push. Saquon is a shell of what he was last year.
I don't think that's his fault, though.
Right. It's not, right? Yeah. But Jalen Hurts is at times running for his life. He's one read and then tuck it and run or bounce out of the pocket. I mean, Thursday's the debacle. I can't put too much on the defense. No Jalen Carter. Quinyon Mitchell gets hurt with a hamstring. He goes out. So now we're down to the JV cornerbacks who are getting picked apart by the JV receivers from the Giants. And that was a disaster. So yeah. I put it on the offensive line first, I guess. I don't know. And then maybe Sirianni. Everyone hates Kevin Petullo, but he's not in a vacuum. Poor Kevin Petullo just gets – the offensive coordinator just gets crushed. It's not like he's in a isolation cell coming up with a game plan by himself. There's other people contributing to this.
So I blame Kevin Petullo. So here's the thing that keeps coming up, and this is what, like, because the national guys are now trying to figure out what's wrong with the Eagles, and it's true because all the film nerds see the same thing. Like it's very constant with all the film nerds. The Eagles run out of certain formations, and they pass out of certain formations, and they never do one out of the other. Mm-hmm. So when the Eagles line up, the defense knows this is a run or this is a pass. And I think that is killing the offensive line because it's really hard to block when you line up and everybody on the defense is going, this is a run. And it's the same thing when you line up and all the defensive linemen are like, don't respect the run, this is a pass. And I think that's something that the Eagle, and this might be something that Sirianni has a hand in too, you know, whatever the offense, but the Eagles are a simple team. They've always been a simple team. We know this. But they've never married play action well. They've never thrown out of their run fits at all. I mean, they're just not very good at it. And it's starting to catch up to them. And I think, you know, you see them have success in the first half of games, and then the second half they're getting destroyed. And it's because they line up and the defense knows immediately, like, this is a run or this is a pass.
It is kind of wild to me, like, Kevin Petullo was on the staff last year. Now, I will say, Kevin Petullo was the passing coordinator last year. And what did everyone complain about last year? Passing offense. So they elevate the passing guy when it was not that great last year. But, like, you know, wasn't he watching last year? Can he go back and watch, like, hey, what did Kellen Moore do last year that made this offense successful? Maybe I should do the same thing. And he just can't quite seem to get that, like turned properly to, like, engage everything. Like, they've changed up some stuff. They went to that, like, shovel pass to Goddard on the goal line from the tush push. By the way, can we talk about four straight tush pushes on Thursday night? I do think that was possibly a seminal moment in the NFL, in the history of the NFL, where people were like, all right, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I have had enough. It was admittedly, like, even from Eagles fans, Craig, from Eagles fans, I was getting text messages say, like, this is bonkers. This is bananas. Yeah. We've gone over the line. We pushed it too far. We just pushed four tush pushes. Like, this is outrageous.
Oh man, Craig, what do you stand on the tush push?
Well, you know, four in a row is it's a lot of pushing of the tush. But to me, who knew that, you know, we talked we've talked about the Lions losing Ben Johnson and how that might affect him, and it really, after game one, it really hasn't affected them. Seems like losing Kellen Moore might be the bigger coordinator loss that nobody really talked about, because he was obviously the last head coach, you know, hired by the Saints. What I want to ask you both, tush push aside, where do you think, and obviously the Lions are playing right now and they're in a close game with the Chiefs, where do you think that the Eagles now rank in the hierarchy of the NFC? Like, is Tampa better than them? Is Detroit better than them? Like, where do you guys stand on that? Jack, why don't you go first?
Well, I mean, if you had talked to me on Wednesday, I would have said the Eagles are untouchable. They do not lose. The Broncos' loss was a fluke. Sometimes it happens, but now, like, they got out-toughed and outplayed in every single way by the Giants. So how can I say they're better than the Lions? How can I say they're better than the Bucs? I don't think they are. And they have a lot of stuff to figure out. Like, all right, you know, were they better? They were better than the Rams by the fact that they blocked the field goal as time expired. And I had a buddy today telling me, he's telling his 6-year-old son, well, you know, the Rams are going to make this field goal. His son goes, Dad, no, they're not. They're going to block this. The Eagles always win. and you know, lo and behold, they do. And the kid thinks his dad is a moron because the Eagles blocked that kick. You know, so it's like they were finding every single way to win.
Yep.
But that can't continue forever. And they can't pull these out of, you know, they can't pull a rabbit out of the hat every single week when they don't have – when they're not winning at the line of scrimmage, either on an offensive line or defensive line. And that seems to be the case, is like they don't get a rush from their front four and they can't run the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I am, my concern level right now for the Eagles is very high. Like, do I think as a team they're worse than like half the NFC? No. But if they had to play a game against half the NFC right now, I think I would pick them to lose. I just don't feel confident in the way that they're playing. So it's hard for me to put them in a hierarchy. My thing is, like, it just, I don't know. Jack mentioned, like, they got out. First of all, it's funny. We're talking about the Bucs. They beat the Bucs in Tampa like 3 weeks ago and they beat the Rams, which is crazy.
Handily, save for two long passes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, they have been out toughed in every game this year, and they have been out gained in every game this year. Yep. So, like, I think they're the first team to ever win the Super Bowl and then get outgained in their first six games the next year. Like, that's wild. I don't think many teams ever get outgained in the first six games of a year. So,
with that much talent too.
Yeah. So it's obviously something's wrong. Now, they were able to fix, they started the season 2-2 last year. And I remember Jack and I feeling the exact same way we do now during last year. Cause we were both like, they got to fire somebody, like, this is bad.
I was ready to fire Sirianni.
And then
he would get fired. If the bye hadn't been so early, I thought he was getting fired.
So they had a bye and that changed the season. So I wonder if the mini bye does something for them. So they have 10 days off before they have to go to Minnesota. They got at Minnesota and then they got the Giants at home. I think you have to win both for me to feel better. Like, I don't think you can't beat the Vikings and then get swept by the Giants, first of all, and have me feel good. And you can't lose your third straight game. And I don't care if you beat the Giants at home after that. Like, that's not doing anything for me either. So I think you have to win both these games. Going to the bye 6-2. And then they'll come out of the bye with the Packers and Lions. And then we'll see. But my confidence level right now in them is right now not very high at all.
Yeah. And do you think this is the week that AJ Brown gets traded to the Patriots, or is it going to be next week? What week do you think that's going to be? I wish I had a surprise Dan Hedman lined up ready to jump in here, but I don't.
Yeah, no, we only have time for one guess.
Yeah, no, well, we couldn't. Yeah,
the whispers are turning into murmurs, Craig, that AJ Brown's going to get traded. I don't know.
I still don't. I don't think it's happening. Not during the season.
No, not during the season.
No.
All right. Well, you know who's going to be our guest the week he gets traded to the Patriots.
Right? Oh, that's a shoo-in. That's a shoo-in. Yeah. He already has the AJ Brown Patriots jersey. So, speaking of the Eagles losing to the Giants. The Giants took, I think, a 14-3 lead in that game as the Phillies and Dodgers went to the 11th inning in what was one of the most outrageous finishes to a baseball game I've ever seen. And 1-1 pitcher's duel that was really one of the more tremendous pitching games I've watched. I wasn't even, usually I hate the Phillies offense. I was not upset with the Phillies offense that night because of how good the pitching was on both sides. I was genuinely enjoying it. The bases loaded, bottom of the 11th, tied 1-1. And a ball is hit back up the box to Orion Kirkering, who bobbles it. And instead of throwing to first, he panics and throws the ball 8 feet over the head of the catcher, who's pointing to first base. So, Jack, what was your take on the end of this this Philly season here?
So I'll just set the scene for you guys. I was in the family room. My wife was fast asleep upstairs. I had the Phillies on the TV. I had the Eagles on the laptop. I hear the crack of the bat, and you guys know, right? You hear that crack, and then I think it was Brian Anderson says, a broken bat, right? And you're like, amazing, right? Because you see it go back up the middle. It could be right through him. It could be smoked. So he has broken bat, and it hits Kirkering, right? And you're like, and my first reaction is elation. I'm so happy. I'm like, they got out of this. They did it. Right. So I see him pick up the ball, and then the camera cuts to, I guess, an overhead shot. And then Kirkering is throwing home, and like everything is happening all at once. And I'm sitting up, and my jaw is just like dropping to the floor. And I'm just like, what just happened? Like, I was so appalled, dumbfounded, flabbergasted, heartbroken, like all of the negative emotions were filling up. Rage were filling up at time.
Did he talk post game? So what did he say post game, where he was like, did he just take, obviously, I assume, accountability?
He put the whole loss on himself. He sounded like he was
a brain fart. I mean,
but yeah. he said he just thought, because the ball bounced in front of him, he said he thought it would be easier for him to throw straight ahead than it would be to turn and throw to first. And then he just panicked.
Was it bases loaded too? Was it a forced play at the plate?
Bases loaded, yeah.
It was a forced play at the plate, but if you
the guy wasn't close down, to first base.
Which I did because I have a sickness. I slowed it down. If he threw that to Real Muto, I don't think he gets him.
No, he doesn't.
I think the guy is
a terrible player regardless.
Meanwhile, Pagas, who is like four steps out of the box.
Yeah.
And like only really starts really running when he realizes that Kirkering didn't field it cleanly.
And two things can be true, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's not, you know, you can blame him, but like look at the offense and they one run across again, blah, blah, blah. I will say in this game, the way this game was pitched, two things can be true. One, I feel bad for Orion Kirkering.
Yeah.
And two, that loss is squarely on his shoulders.
Yes.
I was on my couch. I actually had the Eagles game on my TV and the Phillies game on my phone because I was driving home from work. Don't tell the police. I was driving home with the game. I was watching the game on my phone that was like on my dash on because it was on HBO. I was streaming.
Pops, get him.
I made it all the way home. No accidents. But because of that, I just kind of left the game on my phone while I was eating dinner. And I just had the game on my phone and I'm sitting on the couch next to my wife. And when he throws it home, Jack knows I was a Phillies non-believer this year, but I was so into this game because of how well it was being played that I had convinced myself that they were going to win this game and go to game five. So I was into it and I was rooting heavily for them. I audibly laughed when he threw it home because I was like, I can't believe that just happened. And even my wife goes, is that really how that game just ended? And I was like, yeah, I you know, and now I have to watch this Eagles Giants game.
Let me flip over to this disaster.
It was like chasing, it was like chasing a shot of old granddad with just like a cup of piss. It was not enjoyable. And then to put insult to injury, Jack, Saturday, Penn State loses its third straight game, this time to Northwestern. And well, James Franklin today finally fired.
Can I interject a couple of things? So yes. not that anybody cares, but the Flyers lost. They were plus 200 to win on Thursday night. So they lose. It's the first time since 1983 that three professional teams have lost on the same day in Philadelphia sports. Nobody cares. We wake up Friday morning and Rob's guiding light, his spiritual advisor, Sister Jean, kicks the bucket. Devastating. Just terrible.
Oh, we lost her?
106.
106, Craig. 106.
Oh, I didn't even realize we lost her.
Craig, they made her work until last year. They were still pushing her into the office. Jeez Louise. That's too much.
Imagine having 65 more years of life ahead of us.
Wait, and you have to keep working.
I can't believe I found out that we lost Sister Jean on the podcast. This is
live on Run the Damn Podcast.
This is only like Craig. That's like the fifth worst thing that's happened to me this week. Losing Sister Jean. All right. So then Friday, I'm all over the place.
He's like a brother to you.
Saturday, I'm all over the place. I have everybody's running around. The kids are driving me nuts, right? I'm trying to lock into Penn State. I don't even want to watch it, right? They're again at 20-point favorites. Do you guys know that there have been two teams that have lost as 20-point favorites this year, and both of them are Penn State? and there's like 68 teams that have won. So I'm watching, they lose in like just horrific fashion. My dad is texting me that he is out as a Penn State fan after telling me Thursday that he is too old to be nervous about the Phillies. Like he's got a whole bunch of years left for the Phillies, you know, victory parades that are not coming.
We'll subtract 106 from, or subtract his age from 106. Yeah. You'll see how much time he's got left.
So Penn State loses. Now, Franklin, all this week, everyone's saying he's unfireable because he's got a $50-plus million buyout. So the news came through today at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm kind of shocked. I guess someone ponied up the money, but Franklin is out. Now, my dad's sweating out who the interim is, as if that guy's going to matter.
Terry Smith.
My dad was happy about that. He's like, oh, yeah, Terry Smith. All right, good. We'll get some recruits back. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I did go to some sources plugged into the program, and I did ask. They do not want Lane Kiffin.
I wanted Lane Kiffin at Penn State.
They're on board for Kirk Cignetti, who Indiana's coach, who might be a madman as well. He has some Western PA ties, grew up there.
That team is playing their ass off, though. That is a good team.
Well, I'm worried that Mark Cuban might pony up to keep him there.
What do you think about Matt Rhule?
I would be fine with Matt Rhule. I would take Matt Rhule. I feel like he has enough to – Penn State has the facilities. They have the recruiting footprint for Rhule to kind of go in there and say, like, hey, I'm taking this to the next level. Like, he got – Nebraska from being totally inept to being competent, and now they like win the games that they're supposed to win. Obviously he took Baylor from, you know, basically getting the death penalty to the Big 12 championship. He's the only one who he got game day. He was so good at Temple that game day came here. I mean, that was like, you know, moving heaven and earth. Game day was at Independence Hall in Philly. Like that Kirk Herbstreit's not coming back here.
No.
So.
No. Oh man. I'm upset about the Lane Kiffin. I thought Lane Kiffin at Penn State would be an awesome fit. And like the way Paterno ended, you could really get away with hiring anybody at this point and just be like, well, I mean, come on, look what we, it's not matching what we had then.
You're not wrong. I did have someone who told me, this was about a week ago, that Penn State will never win again until they put the Paterno statue back.
Oh, okay. I had to bite my tongue.
I was like, oh, let's not go there, dude. Listen, yeah. I'm full on board for the Lane train. You know, the people, my sources telling me no Lane are just guys who are blue bloods and just don't like Lane because he's Lane. Football games, Craig. Like I wake up on Saturdays and like, let's win some football games. Let's coach them up. You know,
I think that program's at the point now. They got to do anything to win, or anything just like, you know what? How about beat Ohio State during a season and like go undefeated?
Yeah, well, that's not happening this year now, but well, no, that would be nice. Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say they did in like, you know, this maybe is what Frank got Franklin fired. So Drew Aller, well, Craig, I did predict that he was not going to win the Heisman, but be in the final. Okay. I said he would be in New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation.
Yeah. And what did I say?
Yeah. You said that was dead wrong.
What else did I say about Drew Aller?
Craig, I'm prepared. I will buy Drew Aller a plane ticket. He can go to New York. Yep. No one's inviting him to the Downtown Athletic Club, but that's for sure. But if he's in New York, my prediction remains true. So Drew Aller gets hurt. It's 4th-and-3 with 2 minutes to go. They bring in the backup who runs what appears to be a quarterback draw. Now, if you're going to run the ball, could you maybe give it to the two guys who are like both getting $1 million in NIL and like
starts,
yeah, maybe can break a tackle. He drops back. He doesn't look at any receivers. He tucks it into what appears to be an open lane that gets sandwiched by two big fat white dudes from Northwestern who bury him at the line of scrimmage, and the game is over.
And that's a wrap. Yeah.
And that's
a wrap. They lost 22-21.
22-21.
And yeah.
That's a tough one. And the funny thing is, we talked about it earlier. This was – Jack was who we wanted to be the first guest on the – you know, we've done obviously a handful with just Rob and I. We've talked about having guests. Jack was the first person we wanted to have as the guest. And this decision was made before pretty much any of this Philly stuff happened this week. It's just kind of the way it all worked out. We're like, all this shit was happening, and we didn't even plan for it. It was just like, Jack's on board. Now the whole week's going to get effed up. Like,
bonkers. To just add insult to injury, I worked so hard on my top five coaches. I listened. And then Penn State totally jams me by firing. Now my number one worst coach in America is not employed as a coach, so I can't even name him.
Well, do you want to give us your bottom five? Do you want to give us your bottom five?
Are you ready?
I'll pull it up.
You guys can jump in.
That is very funny. It's true. We had planned this well before any of the nonsense of the last 8 days happened.
All right. Are you ready for number five? Now, I was hesitant to put this guy in. I know that you guys put him in. And when you said his name, I thought, I think he's getting a bad rap. But today, I read an article after their game that made me think, oh, man, this guy is on here. And it's Aaron Glenn. So Rich Kotite and Adam Gase, they never went 0-5, let alone 0-6. And then I see today on ESPN.com this evening that Aaron Glenn defends Justin Fields despite his negative 10 passing yards. He got negative 10 passing yards. Just don't defend him.
To clarify one thing, I just want to make sure I have this right. He's your number five coach?
Yeah. We're going number
He might be
you have four worse than him, and he's the only NFL coach that doesn't ever win this season.
Yes. Well, I have three. Well, I got four. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Go all for
right.
it.
Who do you got? Who's next?
All right. Well, next I have – this one's a little bit of a wild card. You guys did have him at one point. Brian Daboll. Yes, he won. Yes, I'm mad about it. Yes, I'm pissed off. But really, I have him as the fourth worst coach because he absolutely bullied the entire medical staff into putting Jackson Dart back in the game.
Yep.
And, like – he's, you know, it was one terrible Russell Wilson pass, And now he's screaming at people, screaming at the doctor. The poor doctor in the suit and tie is getting screamed at. He's like, hey, I didn't sign up to get screamed at by you. And then, like, let's not even get into, why is Cam Scataboo in the medical tent? Where's he? Where did he get his medical degree from? Get him out of there.
And then I remember the woman in a trench coat entered at one point. I don't know who she was.
It was a total sideshow in there.
There were like 15 people in there.
It was like a start of a bad novel or like a bad movie. Like I do love that Jack is, there's absolutely no rules to anyone's bottom five coaches. You can do it for whatever reason you want. I love that you're doing it
for totally selfish reasons.
Not because he won a game by 3 scores, but because he's going into the goddamn medical tent.
He has no concern for Jackson Dart's personal or future physical or mental health. All he wants to do is not have to watch Russell Wilson throw any more passes. I mean, what Russell Wilson, I don't know why they called a pass, but then he threw an absolute duck. And I was like, thank God. Like that
was the first down. Pass because Scataboo was in the tent with Dart.
Scataboo was also. Did you notice Russell Wilson audibled and then killed the audible and then audibled again and then killed the audible and then they had to delay a game that wasn't called and then he threw the duck?
Dude, I did not notice any of that. I was still devastated from the Phillies. But that
he had no idea what he was
that
doing.
That was just peak Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see who I have in number three. Okay. I mean Zach Taylor, my God, dude. I've had enough.
Sucks. Yeah. I agree.
I just like, all right. Like, I know you don't have Joe Burrow, but your team, you're limping into the season yet again. Now you are wholly uncompetitive with of what people thought was a fairly competent backup quarterback in Jake Browning. I just watched him get smoked. I don't even want to spend any more time on Zach Taylor. Like, get him out of my life. Get him off my TV. I don't want to see him anymore. I have had enough. On to number two. Rob, I'm mad at you for this. How are you letting – it didn't come out until after the podcast. The number two worst coach in the United States of America is Jonathan Gannon. He's incompetent.
I had him on my list this week for
punching a player.
For hitting the player.
Oh, yeah. You can't assault a player on the sidelines. Listen, Jonathan Gannon is a fake tough guy. He's the fakest tough guy
in
America.
He's always been a fake tough guy.
Get the hell out of here, Jonathan Gannon. If you you can like do that in the locker room and you will get knocked out.
I agree.
Anyway, do it to the kicker and the kicker will knock you out. Like you do it on the sidelines and everyone's got to be like, oh, dude, all right. Like, but dude, get out of here.
I agree with
He was a fake tough guy with the Eagles when he's like, you know, talking tough, like we're going to, you know, he had the video where we're like, we're going to gut them with the Niners. And then like, you know, the heavens part and the Eagles managed to injure every single quarterback, every single person that took a snap for the Niners got hurt that game.
Yep.
Get Jonathan Gannon out of here. And then he totally jammed the Eagles by wanting to go to the Niners when the Super Bowl was on the line.
The Cardinals.
The Cardinals and the Cardinals stink. And they lost again today.
Yeah.
All right. And my number one, I'll wrap up quickly. Obviously, it was James Franklin. Now I have to pivot to a guy who didn't even coach this weekend. He spent a nice weekend in Nantucket.
Yes.
Bill Belichick. Yeah. He's the worst coach in America.
And the stuff that came out this week is amazing.
It's incredible. Yeah. I just have two questions for you guys. The first question, how many losses will it take this season for Jordan Hudson to break up with Bill Belichick?
Oh, that's a good question.
And secondly, what is more humiliating for Bill? Getting fired by UNC or getting dumped by Jordan?
So I think
I have a take on this.
I think nine losses is what has her say, see ya.
She won't even get to double digits before she cuts bait.
See, what, I don't think she's cutting bait yet. I mean, he's 74. He's 74. I mean, he's not going to be like Sister Jean. There's no way he's making it as long as she did.
So the
question is, how long will she put up with this to get the real reason she's there? Like how long will she go?
I'd like to amend my answer. I think she waits until after he's fired because I think she wants a piece of the buyout money. and then that's when it, you know, give me a chunk of that 50 and then it's, you know, then she gets to see it.
I don't think she, you know, it'll be one of those, like, she quiet quits and then like we find a TMZ gets a picture of her with another, with like a 50-year-old man like on the beach in Florida or something like that.
Listen, I will right now sign up for Lane Kiffin and Jordan Hudson to Penn State. Signed, sealed, and delivered. I will take it as long as we're winning football games.
I wonder. I really hope that when it does. Oh, sorry. If it does end, this could be true love. if it ends, I would like to know. Will we find out who dumped who?
No,
that's what I would like to know.
So my take is that it's way more humiliating for him to be fired by UNC because he's a football guy, right? There's a million ways that you can explain away Jordan breaking up with Jordan Hudson.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's one and done here. I think he's.
Oh yeah.
I think it's they. I think he rides out the season because I just don't think it's worth it for the university to do that during the season. I think they agree on whatever the buyout is. However, they need to make it mutually part ways as they always do. And then he just goes into the off season. He'll pop up on, you know, maybe we'll get him as a guest.
Media.
Maybe he'll join us on the podcast here. And
this might be the only media outlet that would let him back on. Yeah.
We'll break bread with Bill. And you know what? Look, I just think it's going to be one of those off season quiet thing, you know, it's a random Tuesday in like February when it's like, oh, Bill Belichick isn't going to be back as head coach of the Tar Heels. And then it's like, well, nobody cares. And then he'll do some football analysis for the NFL come fall of next year.
Bill would come on this podcast and be like, oh, the Patriots should trade for AJ Brown.
I think you're right, Craig. I think that makes the most sense.
He'll come on and I'll be like, well, Bill, you're not as good as our first guest, Jack Loughran. So it is lofty standards.
Give your top five list, Bill. Run us down your terrible week. How bad has your week been? I'll come back and we'll go week for week and see whose week has been worse.
Bill will be like, oh man, I'm a huge Phillies fan and man, I lost. Yeah. Love Penn State.
How does he not turn first?
Oh man. Well, this has been a tremendous first guest experience for us. Jack, thank you for taking the time out to join us. What an unbelievable time we had. A great, free-flowing conversation. And we look forward to having you back at some point because this was a lot of fun. But for now, we appreciate it. That'll do it for another Run the Damn podcast. We will run it again 1 week from today. Have a good night, everybody.